The Source Podcast is brought to you by TechPont, a San Antonio company that uses cutting-edge digital technology to elevate marketing and advertising campaigns while reporting on transparent, measurable results. Their custom-built marketing strategies offer complete digital solutions and management. TechPont strives to help businesses connect with customers and effectively grow businesses. More at TechPonte.com.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. You see them on the sides of the road, huffing, puffing, pounding out the miles, and you drive by and you might wonder, why would anyone do that? You know, why run? And then maybe one day you might see them and you ask yourself, maybe I should try that. Running is a rich experience that pays back multiple times everything that you put into it, and every runner's story is unique. NPR host Peter Sagal joins us. He has written a runner's memoir called The Incomplete Book of Running. And Peter, welcome to The Source.
I am, yeah. Everything went silent. I was afraid I'd lost you.
I know. It's kind of one of those scary moments there, but we got you. Lots of ways for our listeners to join us in this conversation. You can call in at 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You can also email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. So Peter Sagal, your book, The Incomplete Book of Running. And when I opened it up and I started reading it, and I noticed the very first sentence of the book, you mentioned San Antonio, and that's cool. And I wonder, that's a neat trick. I mean, is every book that you put out have a different city in the intro?
I do. I don't remember doing that. When do I do that? Read it to me.
All right. The first sentence of the book, you talk about when William Gear was 17 years old, and when he was riding his bike down the middle of a street in San Antonio, Texas, he was struck by a car.
Yes.
I'm wondering if we should try a different connection. So what we're going to do is we're going to call you back. We're going to put you on the phone. And in the meantime, I'm going to put on Gabriela. Gabriela, welcome to The Source. And Gabriela, welcome to The Source. Thanks for calling in. And we're talking about running in San Antonio. And Gabriela, I know you have something to offer.
Yes. Hi, David. I'm Gabriela. I'm the founder and director of Run SAU. We are a nonprofit providing free running activities and fitness opportunities for kids in San Antonio. We do this in order to try to build healthy habits where they're needed most. Currently, we have two locations.
Okay, and so Gabriela was talking about her running group, and they are working with kids in order to teach them the healthy habits that apply to, you know, that people can apply, the mental fitness that comes along with physical fitness when you become a dedicated runner. And understand now we have Peter Sagal on our phone line. And Peter, are you there?
Yes, I am this time. So let's start this again. That was not going to go into the Hall of Fame of live radio, that exchange. So
well, maybe in the we survived. You know, which
we
is,
survive. We're all here. This is the people think that we here in public radio don't endure dangers. Well, we just got through a terrible experience together, and I think we're closer for it. But
yes, I feel
yes.
It.
As you reminded me, my book does mention San Antonio toward the beginning, not the first line. But yes, that's because the first chapter of the book is about a run I did, specifically the Boston Marathon, along with William Greer, a native of San Antonio. Now he lives in Austin, where I have occasionally seen him in the intervening years and gone for runs with him around Town Lake. So yes, you are right. San Antonio plays a prominent role in my book, and I hope that means every one of your listeners will immediately run out and buy it.
Right. Also, it foreshadows something else that happens in your book when you yourself get hit by a car.
Yes. There's basically there are two people being hit by cars in the book, and I am one of them. However, the book is not entirely devoted to being hit by cars. That's not a cheerful topic, and I try to avoid it whenever possible. And I should say that I walked away from my accident in a much better shape than William did. William's, who, as I write about in the book, is kind of a hero. He's somebody who, well, frankly, they thought he would spend the rest of his life lying in a bed insensate because of the injury. And not only did he recover from this injury, a severe blow to the back of his head, but he's gone on to be a professional husband and a very accomplished marathoner and ultra runner, and it is my privilege to know him.
So you signed on to be William's guide during the Boston Marathon, and, of course, that was an interesting experience in and of itself. But this
wasn't just
any Boston Marathon. This is the 2013 Boston Marathon that ended up with a horrible terrorist attack.
Yeah, of course, none of us knew that this was going to be, you know, an unusual marathon. We just thought it was going to be a marathon, which is hard enough, frankly, without any bombings. William and I ran the Boston Marathon together in 2013, him as a competitor of the marathon, an entrant, my as his guide. William is blind, or legally blind, because of that injury to his head. It sort of destroyed his visual cortex, which lives in the back of our heads. And he needed a guide to get through the marathon, and I volunteered to do it. So William and I, after what I say, and will argue to the end of time, was an extraordinarily heroic marathon in which he triumphed over a lot of difficulties above and beyond the 26 miles you have to run. We crossed the finish line just about 4 minutes before the bombs went off, right where we had been 4 minutes before. So it ended up being a much closer brush with death and destruction than any of us expect on a bright, sunny day in Boston, Massachusetts.
NPR actually reached out to you that day, and you provide some of the breaking news coverage. We have a clip of that. Let's hear it.
Peter Sagal, the host of the NPR News Quiz program, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, ran in the Boston Marathon today, and he joins us now. Peter, how close were you to the explosions?
Robert, I was about 100 yards beyond the point of the explosion in what we call the finishing chute, a long area that runners walk through after finishing a marathon. We had just finished at about, I think it was 2:45 around there, Boston time. Heard a huge explosion. I had been guiding a blind runner today, so both he and I were shocked. I turned around and saw a big white plume of smoke that appeared on the other side of the finishing line from us, that is in the course side. Then another second large explosion happened just a moment later with another plume of smoke.
And that was Peter Sagal, author of The Incomplete Book of Running, talking about his experience at the Boston Marathon. As he crossed the finish line, the explosions happened. And so as you look back on that now, years later, Peter, how do you remember that?
It's funny. I'm such a reflexive public radio guy that when on tape Robert just started talking, I was like, yes, Robert. I almost responded in real time. You can't resist him. It was a crazy and chaotic day. Nobody expects to be in the middle of an international news event. And one of the things I remember about that day was, even though I was 100 yards away from a bomb, I could hear it. It was the single loudest noise I've ever heard. I could see the plume of smoke. I didn't believe it was happening. There's just this level of disbelief. Like, how could this possibly be happening? You know, this is not the sort of thing that happens at the Boston Marathon.
Sure, and runners, attacking runners, which are probably some of the most interesting, optimistic people, vulnerable, rather, running the marathon. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Peter Sagal returns. He's going to read a segment of the book for us, and we'll take your calls. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this quick one-minute break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. With me on the line, Peter Sagal, author of the book, The Incomplete Book of Running. You might know him, you probably know him, as the host of NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. You've run a lot of races, Peter. You've been involved in running. But then there's one part in your book on page 55 really stuck out on me. It really put a lump in my throat when I read it. It shows me a lot of what running does, not just for yourself, but for the community. And I'm wondering if you can read that top paragraph from page 55.
I don't have the pages in front of me, so tell me the words with which it starts.
Oh, okay. My wheedling and my begging.
I should give this some context. I am a hardcore runner, and that means I'm very self-important. And I had spent my running career looking down on charity runners, the people who say, for example, can't qualify for the Boston Marathon by running a good time, so they have to promise to raise X amount of money to get a charity bib. Again, I'm a snob, but it just so happened that due to circumstances that are complicated to get into, I find myself running not only a charity race, but one of the silliest, ones you can imagine, called the Children's Tumor Foundation Undies Run, which people run about a mile, untimed, unmeasured, in the streets in February in their underwear to raise money for the Children's Tumor Foundation. And I got into it sort of unwillingly, but had kind of a revelation when I finished the race and won the prize for most prolific fundraiser. And this is what I had to say about that. My wheedling, my begging, my bargaining, my offers to wear whatever ridiculous thing my big donor suggested had brought in $4,000 for the Children's Tumor Foundation. And I accepted my medal, in the shape of underwear, of course, with a huge grin. It was the first time I'd ever won a race of any kind by any measure, and it struck me as I grinned and grinned, standing in my underwear in front of a crowd, that I had picked a great one to win. I have run thousands of miles for myself and won. Just one lousy mile up a hill and back for some sick kids I had never met, and in that moment it seemed to me the only mile I'd ever run that mattered.
And you ran that in February in St. Louis, so running in your underwear.
It was lots of fun. It took me a while to go back to St. Wait is going back to St. Louis. This is about, it'll be 6 years later, and I took that long for them to forget about it. It was quite the sight.
But the thing about runners, it's certainly, it's very internal, and you do a lot of self-talk and self-motivation. But being able to use that also to do external, turn your attentions externally to helping organizations, and then also in your book you've done a lot with the seeing impaired community. You go to a school in Louisiana with kids who are seeing impaired, and you help them with their running experience. And then you were the guide on the Boston Marathon, and you had been a guide several times. That's, to me, that's like when a person is feeling a little blue, that's a great cure.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. One of the things that the book is about is how running long distances for apparently no good reason ended up being a very great value to me, especially in helping me get through some very intense personal problems relating to the breakup of my marriage. And in addition to that, what you said is exactly right, that sometimes the absolute best thing you can do for yourself to improve your own mood, to get yourself out of whatever sinkhole of trouble you happen to find yourself in, whatever it may be, no matter how justified your troubles are, is to just go help somebody else. And a lot of us do charity. I do it all the time. I host charity dinners. I make donations. And that's great. And money is important. Donate. But I also find that actually helping another person, in my case, helping a blind person run a marathon because they decided they wanted to do that despite their disability, or helping somebody who can't shop for groceries do that or anything that way, is a huge gift to yourself. And if anybody out there listening is finding themselves in that kind of trouble of feeling sorry for themselves and trapped in their own problems, and believe me, I've been there, one of the best things you can do for yourself is just go out, find somebody who legitimately needs help and offer it, and you'll feel instantly worlds better about everything.
Let me go to a caller, 210-614-8980. And Lana, I think Lana's got something to say about that. Lana, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I am the program director for Street to Feet, a nonprofit here in San Antonio that specifically focuses on walking and running for those experiencing homelessness. And I just want to say, just to speak on the book and just the topic of running, we get to experience that every day at Street to Feet, really having the individual do a lot of self-investment and build their confidence and their self-esteem through running and these experiences. And we have found that to be such a powerful, impactful tool. What I would also like to say is that there's such growth here in San Antonio in our running communities and running groups all around the community. But what I love about Street to Feet and what I'm so proud of is that we really fill in that gap for those, for the entire community, and for those who are really struggling and doing their best to transition out of a really dark and traumatic place, and doing that through wellness and exercise, and specifically for running. And we know it's a powerful tool, and it connects all the most important things, which is mind, body, and spirit.
And Street to Feet has an annual 5K here in San Antonio. Gets a lot of turnout, supports your organization. And Lana, you have another event coming up soon?
We We do. We have a small fundraiser called the Salsa Showdown. But to talk about the 5K, I just want to say thank you to our supportive San Antonio running community that really rallied behind us in so many ways. And I love it when I get to talk and share what Street to Feet does with other people, other runners, because they absolutely get it. Just like Mr. Peter had mentioned, everybody has a story.
Yeah. Lana, thank you so much for your call. Peter Sagal?
Yeah, that organization is something like other organizations around the country. And I know people might think to themselves, well, what good does it do a homeless person, you know, who probably has lots of other problems, to go for a run? And you'd be amazed. I'm not going to say that running is a cure-all for everything, but it can help with more things than you'd think of. It's a natural antidepressant, simply to be outside and moving. It's a way of coping with stress. It's obviously a way of improving your health. It's a way of improving your confidence. There are a lot of people out there who probably don't believe they could run a 5K, which is about 3.1 miles. But they can. Almost everyone can, if there's not a physical disability. And if they do that, whether they're wealthy, whether they're homeless, whether they're educated, whether they're not, to be able to do that, to do a physical feat like that, that seems impossible to you right now, just as running a marathon seemed to me, you know, 15 years ago, does wonders for your state of mind, for your confidence, for your sense of yourself, for your, you know, the way you look at yourself and your possibilities and capabilities. It's not going to cure problems. The people, I'm sure, that your caller works with, you know, when they finish their run, they still have the same problems that forced them out on the street, made them end up there. But, man, it is a help. And I urge everyone who can, particularly those people who are feeling a little too sedentary, a little too trapped, a little too stuck in their own heads, the kind of person who looks back on their whole day, knows they were doing something in front of a computer or screen but can't quite remember what. I've lived days like that. If people are living their lives that way, I urge you to break the routine, strap on some sneakers, go out and go for a run. And it will at least, let me put it this way, at the end of the day, you'll remember you did that.
And if you don't have to run, you can actually just walk. You can get some of many of the same health benefits, including the building up of executive function, which is something that you get from running, and the neurogenesis and the neuroplasticity, all the great things that you get from running. And so right now we're going to go into our pledge break, and we want to encourage Peter to stick around. We're going to figure out how to keep Texas Public Radio running as we do our pledge drive. And the number to call in if you want to pledge your support to Texas Public Radio is 1-800-622-8977, 1-800-622-8977. We're going to take a quick pause. We'll be right back to try to figure out a way to help you keep public radio running. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Peter Sagal is with us. He's the author of The Incomplete Book of Running. He's also the host of this program that they run on NPR called Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Perhaps you've heard of it. And so, Peter, how did you get into running?
I got into running early. As I tell the story in the book, my father was one of those many, many millions of people who was part of the 70s running boom. And in fact, he had a copy of Jim Fix's Complete Book of Running, which my book is a bit of an homage to. And under his influence, although I resisted for a while, I was a very bookish, nerdy, unathletic kid. Although looking back on it, I think I was unathletic because I was more or less intimidated. I just received the message from the world that I wasn't good at it, and so therefore I decided I wasn't interested. And I started running as a teenager and did okay. Ran my first half marathon back then, but then, as a lot of people do, as I got older, got through college and then into real life, lost, it seemed to me, the time to exercise. And by the time I was in my mid-30s, I was just pretty typical, I think. I was a guy with a full-time job at this radio show and wife and young kids, and it just seemed impossible to find the time. I gained weight and lost health. I was sick all the time. I was falling asleep in the middle of the day. And then this amazing and inexplicable thing happened that I never saw coming. I turned 40. I never thought that would ever occur. That happened to other people. And I found it so scary that I decided I needed to do something about it. and decided I would start running again and then run a marathon, which is, I think, is a pretty typical thing for people in midlife crises to do. We run marathons, we buy sports cars, we go hiking in Nepal, we do other silly things. And I honestly thought that I'd do it, and then it would be done. And what's weird is, even as I speak to you, I'm in my office high up in a tower in Chicago looking over Grant Park, I can actually see the literal spot where I think my life changed. It's on Columbus Drive in Grant Park in Chicago. It's the where the finish line is for the Chicago Marathon. And in 2005, I crossed that line. I'm pointing at it right now and said to myself, I crossed the line in a little over 4 hours. My goal had been 4 hours, and I missed it by about 3 minutes. And I crossed the line having endured the most extraordinary physical misery I can remember going through. Running marathons is hard, especially if you didn't train correctly, as I did not do. And I said to myself, I wonder if I can do that faster, which is not something I thought I would ever want to do. I thought I'd be one and done. But that started me on a fairly successful career as an amateur marathoner. I've run 14 to date. My 15th is coming up at the end of next month up in Big Sur. Countless half marathons. I've won a couple of medals along the way. I became a columnist for Runner's World and part of the running community. So it's hard to explain. I just think that there's something inside all of us that we need to see what we're capable of. And sometimes we need to see it in the context of things that we're not sure about. I mean, I know I can host a radio show. I've been doing it for a while. I'm a bit of a, I think the appropriate public radio term would be a wiseacre. I won't use the term I want to use. So I'm good at that. But to actually achieve something as a non-athlete in a physical endeavor, that ended up meaning a lot to me. And the pursuit of it, I think, was worthwhile every step.
Yeah, I thought I could host a radio show up until today.
And yeah, we both thought.
The wheels are coming.
It's easy.
Yeah, it's weird how that worked out.
Yeah.
I've run a couple of marathons and they were miserable. And my goal for this year is not to run a marathon because I'm just want to keep it to half marathons. You get sucked into, you know, all of everything it takes to get into a marathon. It's just it is quite the dedication. But you discover lots along the way, and you did too.
Yeah, I do. And I think, I mean, first of all, if people don't want to run marathons, they don't have to. Half marathons are plenty. 13 miles is a long way to run. Believe me, I'm not gonna laugh at anyone who chooses to do that. That's hard. I think it's important, though, for people to choose a goal that's just a little bit beyond their confidence level, not necessarily their comfort level, though I think that's important, too. I just think it's important in the life that we lead. And I know that even be able to say this is a bit of privilege because there are people out there who live lives under real stress and difficulty in terms of housing and food and everything else. But for a lot of us, and I'll include myself in this, life is a little easy. You know, I'm not worried about tonight's meal. I'm not worried about my housing, you know. And so I think that it's important for those of us who have that good fortune to get out of our comfort zone because we can become, if not soft, complacent. And we need to see, you know, to endure a little bit of difficulty, to see what we're made of. And in a weird way, it gives us both empathy, in a bizarre way, for those people who have real troubles, not self-imposed ones. But one of the things I found is that when things do go wrong, as they did in my life, I never thought I'd be a divorced dad. Never. I would never. I mean, my parents were together their whole lives. They still are. I never thought I would be one of those terrible people who divorced with young children. What a failure that would be, and yet that is what I became. And it was, in fact, very, very difficult. Without getting into the details for sake of privacy, I'll just say it was not one of those amicable ones. It was a living nightmare for years. And one of the things that I found out was that perhaps, I won't say knowingly, but fortunately, by running marathons, by learning to do difficult things, by learning to endure discomfort, by learning to understand that the task at hand is to survive the mile you're in, not obsess about all the miles in front of you, I actually had been training for years to endure this serious difficulty that came my way. So in the end, it turns out that my, you know, choosing to subject myself to discomfort for a hobby ended up having some very valuable practical use.
210-614-8980 is the number to call if you have a question or a comment for Peter Sagal about running. And Claire, hi, Claire. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thanks so much, you know, for taking the call. So I can definitely relate to running being a huge stress relief and antidepressant. I've had that experience myself. But lots of my, you know, friends and coworkers and family, I hear a lot of complaints, like, I hate running. I never can get started. I recently have gotten started again, and I'm looking to run my first marathon. Never run a marathon before. And so do you have any tips for either the person that is either really intimidated about running and doesn't know where to start, or someone who is trying to run a marathon, it seems really daunting, but I know I want to, you know, do this accomplishment. Any tips on that?
Great, Claire.
Sure,
thanks for the
absolutely.
Call.
Yeah, no, I like I say, I think running is broadly accessible to everyone, and I encourage everyone to try it, even though I know that for many people, they haven't run in a while, they're out of shape, and worst of all, they've learned to hate running. This is a problem that so many of us, running became something we were forced to do, sometimes even as punishment. And I applaud anyone who wants to get over those obstacles and start it again. And to be brief, I recommend three things. First is to start gradually, if you're out of shape, because if you're out of shape and you try to run 3 miles, you will feel miserable. And we're, as like any other animal, we won't do things that hurt. You will avoid it, you know. Your dog doesn't like to be outside in the rain, so, you know, it won't go out in the rain. If you hate running 3 miles, you won't do it again. So start gradually. Make sure that you're testing yourself just beyond the level of comfort. Maybe for some people it's running a block, maybe 3 blocks, maybe 4 blocks. But keep that up, that just beyond your comfort level, and you'll rapidly improve. Secondly, have a goal. A marathon is a pretty big goal. I did it. Many people do it. Thousands of people run their first marathons every weekend. But it's a big goal, so work your way up to it. I recommend for a first goal, if you're starting from just your couch, a 5K, that 3.1 race. It's doable for most people. They're happening every weekend all over the country. I'm sure they're happening this weekend in San Antonio. And pick one 2 or 3 months out, train up to it, get a program so that you're on a schedule. Because if one of the things that was actually said to me by Paul Carrazza, who's a big guy in the running community in Austin, he said, exercise is a chore, training is a pleasure. And that's really true. If you're doing something just because you think it's good for you in the abstract, you'll soon lose interest. If you're doing it for a goal because you want to run that race, you will apply yourself to it in the same way that you applied to get good grades in college or to complete a work project or anything like that. People need goals. We're goal-oriented creatures. And lastly, and this is the one that a lot of people go, what do you mean? Find a group. It is so much easier to achieve your goals in running, or I think anything else, with a group of people. We tend to disappoint ourselves. We tend to break promises to ourselves. Oh, I'm going to get up and I'm going to be out there at 6 a.m. to run my 5 miles, whatever it may be. If it's just you, you're probably going to eventually break that promise, because who's going to care? It's you. But if you have like 3 or 4 friends, you said, I'll meet you at that corner at 6 a.m. to run our 5 miles together, you won't disappoint them. You'll go. And more than that, just having people around you, supporting you, testing you, distracting you, inspiring you, encouraging you is huge. We're social animals. Take advantage of that. You can achieve all kinds of things with a group. But other than that, just remember, if I can do it, and if you could see me, you'd know what I mean. I am a short, stubby guy who doesn't look like a runner, and yet I've finished 14 marathons. And if I can do it, anybody can, and I wish everybody the best of luck if they choose to attempt it.
And there is a 5K this Sunday. It's the City Manager's 5K. It's free for employees and retirees of the City of San Antonio, $7 for their friends and family, and $25 for, you know, anyone else who wants to participate. And it's at Roosevelt Park, so it's right by the Missions. It's going to be really cool. And so, Peter, I tell people when the cure for if you hate running, the cure for that is love running.
Yeah, in a weird way. I mean, I've come to love running profoundly over the years.
There's lots of ways to turn your mind around and say, I keep a little log and I write down my moment of zen from each running. What did I see on this run that was really kind of cool? And it's something to reflect on and to get that dopamine flowing.
You actually said something really important. I was actually having this conversation with somebody the other day, just yesterday, in fact, because they came up to me and they said, oh, Peter, I want to thank you. They said, because I ran a race this morning, a big a community race called the Shamrock Shuffle here in Chicago. And people come up to me and said, I ran the Shamrock Shuffle. It's 8 miles. And I just got to thank you because I was able to listen to your show, and that got me through the race. And I said to them, well, you're welcome, and I'm glad you like my radio show. But why, when you're going out to attempt a difficult thing, are you decided that you have to distract yourself? This woman happened to be, I believe, an actor. So I said, you wouldn't, like, listen to headphones when you were, like, rehearsing for a play, right? I mean, you would focus on what you were doing because what you're doing is difficult and you've devoted your time to it.
Right. So this is the Peter Sagal headphones controversy.
Yes.
I've got to get to a break. So when we come back from that, we're going to hear about why you should listen to yourself when you go running and how to do that. The number to call in if you've got a question or a comment is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We'll also have Peter read another segment from his book talking about body image. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Stay with us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Peter Sagal is with us, host of the NPR program Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, author of The Incomplete Book of Running. An email from Bianca. I found a way to channel my anxiety into running. It has been a healer of my worries. I am more mindful, and I finally feel in control of my anxiety. Ryan from Twitter, I ran my first half marathon yesterday at Fort Bragg. It was awesome, and I might be hooked now to balance that and my first love, cycling. And so now let's go back to Peter about the controversy. And this is a controversial thing, Peter. Yeah, you're evangelizing running in the book, but you're also evangelizing take out the headphones.
Yeah, and the reason is, as I was starting to say, if you're going to do something, pay attention to it. You do that with anything else. But in addition, you know, there's this whole idea like, well, I'm going to go running, but it's so awful and so boring, I need to distract myself. Well, that is not a formula for failure, and it's not a formula for success, I should say. And it's certainly not a way to, as you said a moment ago, learn to love running. The great thing about running is you're outside, you're moving. Pay attention to where you are. Pay attention to what you see. Pay attention to what's around you. We live our lives. People are listening to the radio right now. Maybe they're in their office. Maybe they're in their car. But maybe later on today, they'll be back in front of their computers. Maybe later on this evening, they'll be watching their big screen TVs of whatever delightful entertainment is available. We live our lives from literally the moment we wake up to the moment we close our phone and put it next to us on bed and go to sleep, completely deluged in input. So I am saying that for half an hour a day, an hour a day, take out the headphones, put the phone down, go outside, and see what happens. And what will happen is you'll start to have uninterrupted thoughts. You don't know what they're going to be. They may not be happy thoughts, but they'll be thoughts. They'll be real thoughts, and they'll unfold in a way that we seem to have forgotten how to deal with. In the old days, people used to sit around and stare at the wall for days, and they'd come up with useful thoughts sometimes, or they didn't, but at least it was the way that we were evolved to live. We're ruminative creatures. So and some of my best ideas have come when I've been on a run. I've had a chance to work out terrible things, especially during this divorce. I would run up and down the streets of my town just thinking and sometimes even muttering out loud the darkest, angriest things, but I worked through them. When I got back, I was ready to pick up the day and move on. So like I said, it's your brain. Spend some time with it. Take out the headphones.
I want you, if you can, read another part of the book for us. And this is page 84. It's about for all that fasting. It's talking about body image.
Yeah. Let me. I mentioned this in passing. I don't look like a runner. I'm not skinny. I don't have that angular look. I come from short, stocky Jews, and that's what I am. And when I was very young, I was very self-conscious about my weight, even though I wasn't all that overweight, but I was certainly more so than my peers and felt terrible about it. And for pretty much my whole life, I'm 54 now, I've always struggled with not just my weight, but my self-image about my weight. And what I write about in this section on it is I write about how when I was in high school, I got very, I guess to say, overly obsessed with my weight, and I dieted way too much, and I exercised way too much for the amount I was eating, and I starved myself. I think I was dealing with at least a form of anorexia. And after describing that, I say this. And for all that fasting and running and denying myself anything, and for all the pounds I shed, I would still take off my shirt at the beginning and end of every day. Sometimes I would sneak off to a bathroom with a locked door to do it midday, and look at my protruding ribs and delineated hips and say to myself, still too fat. That breaks my heart to this day, that the fat kid had transformed himself into what he had always wanted to be, skinny, and he was too crazy to notice it. I was convinced that although it went undiagnosed at the time, I was struggling with a form of anorexia. Research shows there are very few teen boys who starve themselves and waste away to nothing, as anorectic girls do. And those who do tend to be extreme cases. Rather, some boys have the same urge as some girls to destroy themselves through the vehicle of the body, but they do it via extreme exercise. If a boy cuts his calorie count down to 800 per day to make weight for wrestling, or if he just obsessively runs long distances, he'll be celebrated for his devotion to bettering himself, even if he wants to better himself right into nothingness. We self-hating teen boys were just another kind of monastic order, down the street from the nunnery, and we chose a different way to flagellate ourselves.
A lot of people get into running and exercising in order to lose weight. I guess there's healthy losing weight, and then there's, you know, body dysmorphia. So do you think that the ultimate reason to go running is to run?
Yeah, I think so. But I think that people should expect improvement. But I think it's very important to expect the right kind of improvement. One of the things that drives me crazy is kind of the exercise industrial complex. All those people on the covers of magazines and God knows on Instagram and surrounding you. And these people are gorgeous. They're beautiful. They have amazing muscles. They're skinny. And they say, oh, if you just exercise or go to the gym using my program or following my diet, you'll look like this. No, you won't. Those people are blessed by genetics and often by wealth that allows them to have daily exercise trainers and nutritionists, blah, blah, blah. You will never become one of those people. And if you try, you will end up frustrated and hungry and angry. What you can do, though, is become the best practical version of yourself. You can be healthier than you are now. Not necessarily skinnier. Maybe that's not in your future. That's not going to happen. I will always have love handles. But you can be a healthier version of yourself. You can be a happier person version of yourself. You can have an improved mood. You can eat better. You can do things for yourself that will never, ever land you on Instagram or in the cover of a magazine, but will leave you happier and healthier than you are now. And that should be your goal.
Let's go to Nicholas called in. Hey, Nicholas, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for having me. Great fans of both of your works. And, so, hey, Peter, I've been running for a long time now, like about over 10 years, 28 now. I've been fortunate enough to not have been injured, but fairly recently I hurt my foot in what I thought was a case of plantar fasciitis. I've been to the doctor and everything's okay, but my question is, how do you proceed past injuries, real or perceived?
Nicholas, thank you for your call.
Yeah, I've had my share of injuries, as any dedicated runner has. I've had plantar fasciitis, I've had piriformis syndrome, I once had to drop out of the Boston Marathon that I qualified for because I tore a muscle in my calf just 2 weeks beforehand. So I've lived with injury. I got hit by a car and broke my back, for goodness sake. So I've lived with injuries, and it's very frustrating, especially if, as this gentleman seems to be, if running is part of your routine, you can't do it. I remember bemoaning my fate after I was hit by that car, thinking, you know, I was so depressed, and my normal antidepressant is going for a run, but I couldn't go for a run. What do you do? And the answer is there are no easy answers. I've yet to discover a doctor who can, you know, give you a shot or a pill that will cure any of the things we've been discussing. But there are two things that help. One is patience, just understanding that the body heals itself given enough time. And freedom from stress, so you probably shouldn't do the thing that hurts. So as the doctor said, does that hurt when you do that? Stop doing it. Resting helps. And the other thing, of course, is cross-training. You know, there was somebody talked about cycling. There are a lot of other things you can do. I'm a runner. I love to run. It's my favorite thing. But I've also swum. I've also biked. I've also taken classes of various kinds, ranging from hot yoga to aerobics. There are a lot of things that you can do that will give you, if you will, your endorphin high. That'll give you the benefits of exercise that won't aggravate or trigger the injury, and they help a lot.
All right.
A way of staying in shape while you wait for the injury to heal. They're also a way of keeping your mood positive and sort of, if you will, feeding that healthy addiction of needing.
And when you get back onto the streets, go easy on yourself. Peter Sagal is the author of The Incomplete Book of Running. Peter, it was great having you. We look forward to seeing you in San Antonio on April 11th at the Laurie Auditorium with the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me crew. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We're taking a quick break to do some pledge drive work. Thanks for tuning us in.